listen to this.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to This Week Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric oncologist, and today is Thursday, January 8th. So if you're listening now, you're listening live, and welcome to our show. Kate, are you there?
I don't know if this is recorded or not. I'm here.
No, that was not recorded.
It was just the music. I was thinking, is this the one we taped? Okay, I'm here.
Good. We'll talk about that little technical stuff later. I forgot to give you a heads up about that, huh?
Yeah, I didn't know if we, I couldn't remember if we'd said that when we recorded or not. But anyway, I'm here. We're
good.
Both here.
We're here, and tonight we're talking about our very favorite thing, things we spend hours and hours talking about in our real lives with each other on the phone, toys and play and how we use them and what we think the best toys are to facilitate language. And you and I were talking about this today earlier. There are lots of good products out there, but it doesn't really matter what toy you use if the adult that you're playing with, that a kid's playing with, is not fun and playful and interactive. None of these toys are even going to work if you don't have a partner there and an adult that's really willing to kind of go the extra mile, get silly, get crazy, get funny, and really play, play, play.
Very true.
Okay, the stuff we're going to be talking about tonight comes from the article on my website, teachmetotalk.com, and the article is called Recommended Toys and Techniques for Targeting Language in Toddlers. I wrote this a while ago and started to review it today and thought, gosh, you know, there's lots of information in here. So if you are a parent or a therapist and really kind of struggling to get some ideas, this is a good article. And the toy is there, plus the activity that I use, plus a little list of target words with most of those toys. So that would be a really good resource if anybody's kind of struggling to do that. And let's just start off by talking about the first category, unless you have another plan for this, Kate. You were telling me that you had done some research about this, and we're really excited about the show. So if you have a different plan than this, you just go for it.
Well, let me first say I am starting to hear a little bit of static. So,
okay.
Not terrible, but a little bit. I guess this is a fun subject for me because we both are somewhat obsessive about toys, but also, you know, in this line of work, we've become very aware of what kind of the marketing industry or the toy industry and their marketers develop as quote-unquote educational toys, and we become even more frustrated over time about that's not educational.
Right.
Particularly for very young kids, which is who we cater to, 0 to 3. But even as they get older, I don't know that some of the quote-unquote educational toys are always best. So, yeah, this is a fun subject, and all I was going to do was kind of diss on something in trying to prepare for the show, and not that I did too much, but I did a little bit trying to let me plug your information on your site, because really I couldn't find anything doing a Google search of play and toys and, you know, how to use toys for language development that came close to the information that you had. And like you said, I know of plenty of therapists myself, speech therapists included, who could really benefit from looking at that information. So I hope that they will, and I hope parents will do the same thing. I was going to say that in doing the research for it, there was some information I came across that just, as usual, got my gander up, because I was thinking, what are they saying? These aren't for speech and language development. And it was on a website about speech development, and they kind of were marketing some toys to parents, I assume mostly parents, perhaps therapists as well, that were looking for things to foster and encourage early language development. And they talked about, are you there?
I'm here. I was just switching phones
over.
Out because
okay.
I think this our executive producer brought me another phone.
A better phone. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, they had some information about DVDs, and they had some information about electronic toys that produce sounds and words, and, you know, the child presses it and it says cow and then moo, and about shapes and colors. Yeah, it's all those things that we just really loathe as far as good educational toys, certainly not toys that really foster language development. And then last but not least, books and puzzles. So, and I know you use some puzzles, and I do too, but to say that those would be where you'd start, you know.
I know, you know, and I really only use books if a kid loves books. And if a mom tells me he hates books, I don't even take them in. I don't even try. And I know a lot of speech pathologists disagree with that, and we certainly test a child's language skills even before three, sometimes by using those crazy picture manuals. What's this? Tell me that. And that's okay, but there are so many language delayed children who loathe books, to use your word. And we're, you know, that's, you can do it with other things. Actually, I prefer to use other kinds of real-life toys and objects, because unless a kid really kind of naturally gravitates to that, that's not something that a typical two-year-old is going to want to do and spend a lot of time doing. So for speech pathologists, to me, who walk in a home or walks even in a clinical setting with a book, a puzzle, and then a set of flashcards, I mean, I immediately think dud right off the bat.
Yeah,
because there's so much more, there's just a much more fun way to do it and a much more logical way.
And a much more effective way.
Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely. And so, you know, if a therapist would say to me, or if a mom says to me, I'm having difficulty with this therapist, one of the first things I say is, tell me what she's doing in the session. And she'll, you know, that's commonly what I hear. And you have that all the time because you work with lots of different therapists, you know, where you'll see and where a mom tells you all the time, you know, my child responds so much better to you because you come in and use toys and you come in and really play with him rather than wanting him to sit down and look at book after book after book after book. And so it's just not an effective way to do it.
No, and even those who do, I mean, common complaints or issues that parents will take note of. One is, even if they do use some toys, they have three different things and they bring the same things every week, and the kid may have liked it initially and then they're bored. And I guess we can work our way towards that. But in general, I think it's a great idea if parents rotate their toys. You know, they don't always have the same. Some houses I go to, they may have great toys, but they have the room full. And
right, I was going to say they're all out all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they become really disinterested with all of them. And mom says, well, look at all the toys he has. And it's like, yeah, but really, since he has them all the time, he's not really showing much interest in them. But anyway, the common books and puzzles and the can't forget the flashcards.
Yeah.
Oh, we just really hate that, don't we, Laura?
Yes, we do. And it really is inappropriate to use that for a big majority of the time with children under three. So if you're a parent who's trying to do that or a therapist trying to do that, pick up some real toys. We're going to talk about some great ones tonight. I feel like this show will probably be a two-part show this week and next week, because I don't think there's any possible way. First of all, you and I could probably talk about this for weeks on end.
And we do, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, just listen up for some additional ideas if that's all you have in your car. You know, our cars, we do this all the time. And, again, our state program really hates us to take in toys when we go see a child for a visit. But I do and will continue to do it until they have the police there to take the toys out of my hands before I go in the house. And then I'll still probably try to find a way to sneak in, because kids really attend to the novelty of the toys that a therapist might bring in. And even as a parent, again, you can achieve that same effect by not having everything out. Go through your toy room or your den or your kids' room and put about half the stuff up in the closet, leave the other half down, and then in about 2 weeks, do it all again, switch it all out. And I used to do that for my kids. I would have baskets or boxes and then routinely put some of them away so that I could get that bang from the novelty when I would, you know, bring it out 2 weeks later. And then it's like it's, you know, a never-ending supply of toys when you've really got kind of the same old stuff, and they play with them so much longer and are so much more interested when there's a little bit of novelty there.
Right. And if you're a parent listening and you've purchased the wonderful toy you thought would be a big hit and isn't, call in at 1-718-766-4332. I want some callers tonight because I love this subject and it's fun to help parents and therapists even troubleshoot about, well, how can we make that work, or maybe it just isn't going to work at this point. But it's fun to talk about it and to help families, because I do see, and I wrote a little message to you on your website, Laura, about hope we get some calls from parents, because
yeah.
a lot of times even really, you know, very, very loving, nurturing, hands-on, well-educated parents don't necessarily have that instinct about how am I going to make this fun, and why doesn't my child attend to this or seem to enjoy it, and what is that therapist doing differently that I don't do?
Right.
So it would be fun to get some calls from people who got a great toy that didn't exactly pan out. So,
right.
Or just need some suggestions about making things more meaningful and helpful as far as early speech and language development. So.
Right. And I will put in a little plug for my DVDs that are also on the website. If you're having difficulty engaging your kid and even reading about it on the website at Teach Me to Talk doesn't make sense to you, get the DVDs, because you can see lots of different toys, lots of different kids, give you some different ideas and some different things to say and some different ways to introduce things and kind of keep a kid going. And again, sometimes parents don't really understand that or get that if that doesn't come instinctively to them till they've seen someone else do it. But it's not rocket science. You can take that DVD in those play situations and really begin to implement some of those things at home, but you've got to see it first. And there are even some clips from all the DVDs, the Teach Me to Talk, which is the first one, and then the new two that we have out. I'm talking like my two-year-old clients today.
Super. Yeah.
But the two new ones are about receptive language, and they're called Teach Me to Listen and Obey. Part one is for younger toddlers or children who are functioning below the 24-month level, and it really talks about how to get a kid engaged and how to start to really teach a child to understand language and follow simple directions. And then the second one is for children who are at the developmental age of 24 months or older, and it takes you through lots of the real early language development as far as expanding your vocabulary with verbs and prepositions and pronouns and, you know, thinking back to all that English stuff that you learned in school. And I've tried to really get a whole big variety of kids with different issues going on and with varying levels of difficulty with speech and language, and then use lots and lots of different toys to be able to show you just some examples of how to use toys to facilitate that language development. So if you're the kind of parent that you need to see it to know how to do it, take advantage of those DVDs. And again, there's some clips of that on the website at teachmetotalk.com. If you'll click the DVD category, you can see some of those little clips if that's kind of piqued your interest.
And Laura, one thing I think that is unique, because I've purchased over the years a number of somewhat similar DVDs or, in the beginning, videos. What's unique about yours is not only do you really show it, but then you also explain it and give a little bit of the theory behind it. So for, you know, any kind of learner, parent would kind of get it. It's, some people need to see it. Some people need to know the theory. Some people need it explained in no-nonsense terms, and yours is kind of unique that way that it does all those things. So.
Well, thank you very much for that. But I did want a tool, and, you know, the main reason I did the DVDs, too, is to be able to give parents of even children that I work with, you know, I'm there 1 hour a week, but so many times, and I bet this happens to you, too, a parent will be so excited about what we've done in therapy, and they're sitting right there with me, and we're kind of doing it together, and then I go back next week, and when I walk in the house, I look at them, and I kind of go, uh-oh, what's wrong? And they say, it didn't work that great. It didn't. I tried to do it like you did, but it didn't really work. And the thing the DVD is useful for is that you can watch it several times and kind of think, okay, how did she do that? How, you know, what did that kid do? What did she do when the kid did this? So, again, it's a tool. And I certainly think that it's with parents. So even the children that I see that I'm with every week, you know, because they can watch it over and over. So, okay, let's move on. This wasn't supposed to be a 15-minute commercial, but oh well.
Okay, but it's worth it.
Thank you. That's very sweet.
You're welcome.
All right. The first category in this toys article that I talk about are movement toys and games, and I put this in there first because this is another common thing that I hear about therapists is that the speech pathologist gets there and she tries to get a kid at a table and expect him to stay there the whole hour. I can barely sit in a place for a whole hour, and I'm a grown-up with a good attention span. And so to expect a two-year-old to sit for a whole hour really is pretty unrealistic. So one thing that you need to have in your repertoire of toys are things that facilitate little movement breaks when you're really playing with your kid. And I love bubbles. That's something that I use, and I don't necessarily make a kid sit down on his bottom to pop the bubbles, but, you know, we're up and we're blowing and they're running and they're popping and they're kicking. Anything that they, you know, that's a good way to get some movement. And, again, it's not movement where you're chasing them and saying, come back, back, come back, I want you to sit down and play with me, but where you really use bubbles, you're getting them to ask for the bubbles, then you're all popping, you're making a big deal about how fun it is. Lots of speech pathologists are really into blowing, too. I would love for kids to learn how to blow, but it's not the end result of that activity for me. But I always make them request bubbles. You know, I don't just sit there and blow endlessly. You know, you might blow one round and then wait and let them sign more or let them say bubble or sign bubble, anything that they could do to kind of request it and get to do it again.
I think the other nice thing that's inherent about bubbles is that they are kids who aren't kind of instinctively social or don't necessarily make good eye contact on a regular basis. When you've got that wand up to your mouth and you're making a big deal and puckering those lips and getting ready to blow, they are right with you. You know,
yeah.
They're really looking
yeah.
at you, and they're attending to your eyes and your mouth. And so it just kind of makes that almost mandatory, you know, which
yeah.
for some of our kids early on particularly, that's a huge issue, and that's a great way to get it, and they're happy. So it works.
It does work. And I do like to use this. I almost always use this as one of my introductory activities with a kid who's pretty visual, say a kid that's autistic or on the autism spectrum, who really kind of gets into that whole visual piece, you know, and you know that a kid is visual when they want to watch hours of television or when they want to watch wheels spin or when they're even, you know, kind of flicking their fingers around and really watching that. Those give you ideas like, aha, a visual toy is going to be a way for me to kind of hook him into playing with me. So bubbles are great because, say, it changes. You know, you see the bubble, then you don't see the bubble, and again, for kids who are, you know, who like to watch the ceiling fan, sometimes I might blow the bubbles up to the fan, and that can kind of get their attention, and it's like, whoa, what was that? So that's another way to kind of use those and think about, and that's one thing we do, too, is really think about, okay, how can we get a kid, what kind of toy would kind of hook a kid in, and bubbles are great for really young babies or children who are at a lower developmental level. Bubbles almost always work, I think, from a kid who's functioning at about the six-month level on, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. It's definitely one of my all-time go-to at first, see what you get
yeah.
things. Mm-hmm.
Me too.
And surprising how many kids per parents don't really use them. And a lot of my parents, even you talked in your article about the no-spill, which are
yeah.
worth every penny that you
yeah.
get. There's, sometimes those are kind of seasonal. They'll only be available as summer approaches or whatever. Occasionally you can see them year-round, but, you know, they're about $3, and they have the bigger ones with three blowers, and those are a little more. But, boy, they sure beat the – I'm old and my kids are old, and they used to dump them out. You know, they didn't make that sort of thing, and if you gave them a jar or bottle of bubbles, they were going to be spilled almost immediately. But those, and they do dribble a little bit, but they're pretty darn good, aren't they?
They are, and I think I said this in the article, no spill bubbles changed my life. It really did in my practice as a therapist, but my whole bag didn't get wet anymore. Even if I had them in the Ziplocs, you know, which I have loved forever, the Ziploc would get a little tiny hole, and then the whole bag would be wet from the gunky bubbles. But now those no spill ones are pretty good, and they still do spill occasionally, but you really can kind of turn them upside down, and it's not the big mess that you
right.
would normally have. So that's a great one. That's a winner. You can do tons of words with that. And, again, the article on the website gives you my list of kind of the target words that I use for there, too. And the other thing that I really like about those no spill bubbles is that you,
Were you thinking about the theme ones where they have various, sometimes they have animals or Dora theme or?
No, it was something else. It was more speech related. Oh, well, I can't remember. It'll come back to me.
Okay.
But you can use those theme ones. And I have the Dora and the Boots and the Diego. Big hit right now. Everybody, most of my little two-year-old friends watch that or at least know those characters. So that's kind of a fun thing to do, too. All right, the next movement activity that I always use are balloons. Some mothers kind of balk at that. Do you have really cautious mothers sometimes, Kate, that kind of think, oh, no, I can't believe you're going to use that choking hazard toy here in my home?
Occasionally. Usually I've about had one blown up before I realize, uh-oh. Then I say, oh, I'll be really careful. And I have to say I've never had anything happen. So
the only thing I've ever had is, I think I talk about this in the article, too, now I see that, is a little girl that did have a latex allergy, and so she had the balloon on her face, and she started breaking out in hives, and her grandmother and I started both going, oh, no, what happened? But, and then the mom was really nice about it because she came back later and said, well, I'd rather find out with a balloon and, in this kind of situation than if she had to have a medical procedure and we didn't know.
Right.
So that's the only thing I've ever had in my career happen. I've never had a kid. But I don't really let kids blow up the balloons. I blow them, and I think you use that blower.
I'm lazy. Yeah, I use a $3 blower where you have to stick it on there and pump it.
Yeah,
which works for me. I'm not into blowing those balloons up. But
well, sometimes I feel like I'm about to pass out.
That's why I don't do it.
If I have a kid that's saying, big, they love that word, and I'm trying to blow bigger and bigger, and I think, oh, no, the mom's going to have to give me CPR right here. But balloons are great, too. And, again, you can get tons of movement. Blow up the balloon. Sometimes I tie it and we kick it around. A lot of times I blow it up and then let it go, let it fly around the room and let the air deflate out of it, which kids think is hysterical. And then they have to run and chase it, and then I go get it from them and do it again. So that's kind of a fun way to use that. But the reason that you want to do the balloons, especially in the middle of kind of a little play session that you're doing, is to give your child an opportunity to get up and run around and move. And the kicker for that is once we all get up and move around and do some running and laughing and catching and jumping, then your little body is their little bodies are going to be more ready to sit down and focus. And the therapeutic term for that we say is regulated. Then they don't have the EBGBs and want to get up and run away. So if you have a kid who's pretty active, what I try to do is alternate a sit-down activity with a movement activity. So maybe we're playing with, say, a farm or something, and then we jump up and we do the bubbles, and then we come back and play with baby dolls, and then we're up playing with balloons. So that you want to alternate those activities between sitting and moving, especially for a kid who's very active and who doesn't have a long attention span. So that's kind of how I use those movement activities.
Yeah, and I guess you're saying the same thing. A lot of times those are my go-to things when I feel I'm losing them. When they're not really paying attention anymore, they're not really focused on me or the activity or toy, and I think, okay, time to get something fun so they can get their little motors running again, and it brings them back.
It does bring them back, and it's a way to kind of get that when they're not. I've heard other therapists talk about taking, quote-unquote, movement breaks where they kind of let the kid get up and run around, but then you still have the problem of kind of dragging them back. And then, to me, I think if they feel like, okay, that was my break, phew, I didn't have to do anything during that time. But I think, no, we can use that more effectively and more efficiently if during your little movement break we're still communicating, I'm still asking for words, I'm still keeping you right there with me with eye contact, and you're still kind of having to interact with me during that period when you're technically kind of up and moving about. We're not going to waste that. It's not going to be 10 minutes on, 10 minutes off. We're going to keep you communicating and interacting the whole time, but we're just still going to give you that movement opportunity even while you're still kind of with me.
Right. Well, you're still learning and communicating, and they just don't know that they're getting the little break. But they seem to enjoy them, don't they?
They do, and they need them. And sometimes I need them, too. I've been sitting, I feel like my legs are going to sleep, and I think, oh, I got to get up and move. I can't do this. So.
Right, or you've done the barn for the fifth time that day and just can't say moo one more time.
Yeah, I'm digging in that bag for something else to do.
It's time to pop and fly. That's right.
Yeah. The next toy that is on here is a toy that you introduced me to called the flat ball. Do you want to talk about that toy?
Well, I guess I will. I just used it during an assessment today, and the mom said, I have never seen one of those. And that's because I'd say really it's probably geared towards a little bit older child, and so zero to three-year parents of young children don't usually know them unless they have those older kids. And I think really it's relatively new. It's not hasn't been around. I mean, it's been maybe 3 or 4 years, I'm guessing. But anyway, it is a brown ball, maybe 6 or 7 or 8 inches in diameter, and you squish it. I say squish. I don't think you say squish, but I
say push.
I squish.
Because I'm always going for those P words.
I've had a lot of kids get that squish from that, but I could say push. So anyway, you just squish it and or push it, and it has kind of a suction cup that you can't see, but it's inside, and it connects as you squish it hard enough or push it hard enough, and then it just automatically pops open, and it's great for that element of surprise.
Right.
And kids are really, you know, who's that? I had before another speech therapist friend actually told me, called and said, have you gotten that flat ball yet? You know, I told you we're neurotic about toys, but
yeah.
No, what is it? Where do you get it? And I think it's, $8 to $10 and virtually indestructible. I mean, it's pretty tough. And I think you wrote on your website, they kind of show that you older kids might use it almost like a frisbee, and they throw it, and then it pops open midair. But I usually just kind of do it on the floor, or sometimes I'll hold it up right in front of my face. So, again, they're looking at me, and we're kind of having that shared experience. But in any case, I kind of control it. And you also noted, and this is true, when it pops open, it can kind of catch a finger in there. Now, I have never had a child be hurt by it. I have had a few kids be a little startled and a little tentative about, ooh, I don't like that. But I've stuck my own fingers in there plenty of times just to see, and it really doesn't pinch. It just kind of closes on it. So, but it's a great, 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 great toy, I think. You know, for $10, it can provide hours.
You
can
get a lot of mileage.
A lot of mileage. And, again, you're saying it's noted in the movement section because, boy, you can sure do a lot with that ball.
You can, and it's sensory seekers who like that deep pressure because they really take their little hands and push that ball down on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a kid who's a crasher and who really likes, you know, who does everything hard, that'll be a toy the kid will really love because they will love pushing it down. And again, it's a joint attention kind of thing. You can share that experience. And now I just remembered what I was going to say under bubbles. Blowing is so calming for some children, and OTs will tell you that too. Sucking and blowing are one of the most regulatory activities that you can do with a kid. So if you have a kid that's really, really hyper and you've gotten them kind of too wound up with the bubbles, you might want to try to have them blow. And so many kids that I see, you know, can't do a little hole, a little circle with their lips around their lips to blow. But even if they're blowing out of those flat lips or even if they're doing a big, you know, still kind of regulatory.
Fitting, you mean?
Yeah. But it is a way to kind of bring a kid down, and that's how I almost always end bubbles is have kids try to blow because it is pretty regulatory. So I'm glad I got back to my point on that.
You knew it would come eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. But the flat ball is a great toy for, again, those kids who need lots of movement and who are sensory seekers. And if you don't know what that means, go back and listen to our series of shows in October because we did a whole month on sensory processing, and that can give you some information about that. Okay, the next toy under the movement section would be a bowling game, and I haven't played bowling in a long time. I've got to go dig my bowling out of the storage room, because that's a really fun game, especially for older kids and for therapists. If you've seen a kid for a long time and are thinking, what am I going to do with him? Bowling is a lot of fun. You can, you know, set the pins up. Then you're across the room and you're bowling. If you have siblings there during your sessions, or for a mom with several little kids, bowling is a fun way to kind of teach turn-taking and waiting. But it's I use bowling with my older twos and my three-year-old little friends all the time. You have bowling, don't you, Kate?
Yeah, mine's kind of been put on hold, too, and I haven't recycled it recently. I guess I use it pretty much the same way. I have that one called Silly Pins. You know, they kind of talk, and it's cute when they get, when they're waiting to be rolled over, they kind of woo and shake. It's kind of funny, but they also have colored pins with corresponding colored pegs that if I'm by chance doing colors, and you know that's not my favorite, but I will sometimes, I do think that just using it as a matching exercise is somewhat beneficial or, you know, worthy of spending time on. I'm not necessarily saying, show me purple, show me red, where's the green? But I am saying, look, I have yellow. Can you find yellow? And seeing if they can do that. And usually kids come around to getting that. But
well, matching, well, and you can probably talk about this better than I, since matching is such an important cognitive skill.
Mm-hmm.
But matching is on the developmental charts way before identifying or understanding colors.
Right.
So matching is a pretty important skill cognitively. So that
right.
would be value in that. I don't have silly fix pens. I look to buying that a lot. But, you know, I hate toys that talk. Because I want the kids to talk and the moms and dads to talk. And then usually toys that talk have lots of buttons and lights.
Mm-hmm.
That's another, you know, one of my pet peeves is for kids to sit there and get entranced and push, 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 and hear the same thing, you know, over and over
right.
and over and over and over. So I have some electronic toys, but not very many. I mean, they have to be a darn good toy with lots of languagey kinds of things that aren't involving letters and numbers, because especially with the kids that we work with, and, you know, and I say this on the DVD, and I've said this so many times on the show, but I'm going to say it again, and you talked about it earlier, but we didn't really talk about why we hate these kinds of toys, but if you have a child who's not using very many words or not, especially not understanding very basic commands, it makes no sense to me why you would even think he should know what the letters A, B, or C look like, or even care if it's blue or red or whatever if he doesn't know ball. And so that's why we hate those kinds of toys, because when you're talking about letters and numbers and colors all the time, you're missing the big picture, and you're missing an opportunity to talk about what the object really is, whether it's blocks or balls or a cow or shoes or anything. You know, you're really missing an opportunity to teach a child very, very functional language that he can use every day to ask for and to understand the things that you're telling him. And when you're focused, hyper-focused on all those other concepts, you're missing out on other time when you should be doing something else. So that's the reason we hate that. I think we've said that explicitly.
Not tonight. Yeah, it's kind of one of our soapboxes, but we do see it in, unfortunately, therapists not infrequently go there. They talk about, well, he needs to know his colors for preschool, or it's important that he recognize numbers or letters, or, and it's like you said, if he doesn't have basic understanding, let alone use of words, but if he doesn't even understand that that's a truck and that's a car and that's an airplane, does it really matter if he knows it's the red airplane? You know,
right.
probably not, but therapists will go there, and parents who are well-intentioned sometimes spend an inordinate amount of time on those sorts of things, and then they go to their toy store or their retail store, and they go to the educational toys, and they have numbers and letters and the alphabet and colors, and they think, well, that's educational. And at a certain
right.
time, that's true, but certainly not for young kids who aren't talking.
Right, and the toy industry really needs a big overhaul on that, because even on the baby aisle, that's what you see. And if there is a representative of a toy company out there, you should call Kate and me, because, boy, do we have some ideas for you. We spend a lot of time talking about what would be great in a toy, and we've even kind of brainstorm this great toy that we, this great toy idea. So if you have any contacts in the toy industry.
One of these days you'll be able to buy our toy on Laura's website. We're not there yet, but boy, do we have the theory, because we are tried and true experts on what works and what doesn't work and what shouldn't even be made. And you're right, even in the baby aisle, how many of the things have letters and colors
yeah.
and way too many buttons and whistles and lights. And what I see more often than not with the kids who do have some sort of delay is they are really just pushing the buttons.
Yeah, and so. There, and some people will try to talk about cause and effect and blah, blah, blah. And yes, you know, that has its place. Or if you have a child who was so significantly delayed and you have to kind of teach them how to do that, yes, that is a stepping stone. But
once he can push, 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 and is pushing, you know, without delay, then he's got it. You know,
right.
There's no point
move
in
on.
Thinking that's going to do anything. Yeah.
Right, right. So just move on. But sometimes those kids really do get stuck in those self-stimulatory loops, and we talked about that a lot when we were doing our shows about autism. And that to them is, there's no real benefit to that other than they're getting the visual feedback from the light blinking on and off. And again, that takes away time from when they can really be interacting with you and doing things in a much more age-appropriate and functional way.
Right. Okay. And I kind of feel like, I've never verbalized this one. If you couldn't use a toy without the batteries, then it's probably not a worthy toy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
the silly six pins, you could very much use it without batteries, and it would be
right.
really every bit as much fun. And say a Fisher-Price barn set that does have the animal sounds, you could turn it off or take out the batteries, and you could still totally use it as a great toy.
Right.
So it's those things that really only work with batteries, and kids would really only be interested if it was functioning with the batteries. Those are the ones you need to get rid of.
Right, exactly. And sometimes even with my toys, I leave it off so that a kid has to ask me to turn it on or in some way indicate, you know, what's wrong? Or, you know, they won't say that. You know, they're just sitting there going, looking at me like, where's the sound? You know, but you can use that opportunity by having it turned off or by having the batteries out to really also give your kid who's kind of hooked on that another reason to communicate with you. Is gives him a way to kind of, you know, want you to help him turn it on or put those batteries back in. But I would not put the batteries in. But anyway, we've talked about that. All right, the next category, inflatable bouncer toys. And I'm talking about those big blow-up things. And if you have a kid who really is a movement kid, a crasher and burner, as Kate likes to say, that $150 toy would be well worth your money if you have the room for that in your home. And when we, when Johnny and I had a group program, we used that almost every day and would blow that thing up. And, it, you know, it looks like a little tent or a boxing ring or a house or something, and you know, you put the big blower on it. Sometimes they come with balls in them, you know, those little ball pit things. But those really are great for letting a kid who needs to move, and it's a great way to use it in the winter when you can't always get outside, when it's too wet or too snowy or too cold. That would be a great way to provide your kids some movement there.
Also okay. along those lines are, you know, some sort of rocking boat, or they have all the different characters that can rock, or even a little indoor slide, or, you know,
yeah.
again, just offer them some opportunity to move right in the house.
Yeah. Other things that families use and other therapist friends of ours use are those blow-up mattresses, those air mattresses. I always think about Sharon, our OT friend
mm-hmm.
from Indiana. She did that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But to bring the blow-up mattress, that's a real fun thing to do, too. And kids can jump on it and climb on it, and then you can roll it up and put it away when it's done. Okay, the next kind of toy would be what I call launchers. That would be, Kate, our Hot Wheels motorcycle set that I haven't
oh, yeah.
had in a while either. Need to get that back out. But any kind of toy, I've got an airplane set right now that you put it on the launcher part, and then you either push the button or the airplane set that I have right now, you have to stomp on it, and it makes the plane or the motorcycle or maybe a gun that would shoot a rocket, anything that's going to propel something away from you, the kids love that, and they get the opportunity again to run, get it, and bring it back to you, and then you have them ask for another turn. Also work with prepositions with this kind of toy with on and off, and then even verbs, you know, shoot, fly, catch it, go, all those things. That's a great toy, too. What other ones besides the Hot Wheels set do you have, Kay? Can you think of other launchers that you use?
Well, we used to love our, you know, pull the Sky Dancer. Sky Dancers were awesome. Unfortunately, they caused some bodily injury, and they got pulled. Not ours, of course, because we were controlling them, but, boy, those were big hits, weren't they?
Oh, I love the Sky Dancer. Remember how long I talked about Sky Dancer after I lost mine? I couldn't find mine. I'm sure it was at that home of that mom. Do you remember that mom that used to want me to let her older kid play with it, and he almost tore it up?
Oh,
several times, and she would say,
you probably hid it under the couch cushion, and you haven't seen it since. Yeah, they really did pull those off the market. Boy, I used to really love those, and eventually, like everything else, they did give out. But it was just a little base.
Party, yeah.
You stuck the little dowel thing, and boys didn't care. They loved them as much as the girls because they were action-oriented. And you pulled a string, and phew, it flung up. But I do think they got recalled because some of them landed on kids and kind of hurt them. And I really haven't found anything quite as cool as the Sky Dancer that really, I mean, I use the motorcycle one. I have some of those popper things. I have a big rocket launcher. I can't remember the technical name for it, but it's the same sort of thing. It has a big kind of bellow thing that they stomp, a rocket stomper or something like that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I also have
things like that at the dollar store, too. Like,
yeah.
Get an airplane, and it may not last more than an afternoon, but for a buck, you've got a good couple of hours out of that.
Right. I also have, I don't know, you have this one. It's, again, one of those Cars-themed toys, and I think they make some others. And remember they had these when I was a child, so this is not a new idea, but it has kind of a zip cord in it.
Yeah.
And you can pull that, and that activates it, and it shoots across. You know, across the room, those shake-and-go cars. I know Fisher-Price makes those. Those are kind of cool.
Even those little cheap wind-up cars.
Mm-hmm.
Those are a lot of fun. I have several of those that I got a year or two ago at Walmart, and they were 78 cents each, and they are still going strong. Or maybe they were $1.78. But cheap, cheap, cheap. You wind them up, and, you know, they just cross the room and then bump into the wall. And again, you can do tons of language activities with those. But the point is, your child is up and moving and very, very involved. And again, it's something that they can go retrieve and bring back to you and kind of stay hooked with you. And they can hardly ever do it themselves.
Right.
Wind it up. Yeah.
You know, I don't know which wind-up toys you're really talking about, Laura. I can't believe this is a novel topic of toys that we don't... It has, a little key thing you turn?
It has a key thing on the bottom, and they're just clear.
Oh, okay, clear. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, those
I do know what you're talking about. Yeah, most kids, delayed or not, don't really have the fine motor skills to really turn, and turn it enough to really make it go. So, again, they really kind of need you there, which is the sort of toys we like.
Right. So that there's inherently a reason for them to try to communicate with you.
Right.
And so, you know, kids with autism that are the draggers and pullers, they'll often take your hand and put it on the toy to want you to wind it up for them. But you can almost always, with a kid that's functioning at the 18-month level or above, find a way to teach them how to ask you for help with that. Even if it's just handing it to you, if it's looking at you and holding up the car, you know, those pragmatic language skills that we talked about several weeks ago, that's a way that you can look on that. All right.
What comes, I'm sure I have other launcher things, but all those are great. Girls
they
like
are.
But boys love them. Yeah.
Boys love them. But you know what else is like this? Are those little wind-up toys that jump, like the little wind-up dolls,
oh, yeah.
Wind-up monkeys. I just bought some of those over Christmas in the holiday aisle. You know what? I think this is an emergency phone call. Kate, talk a little bit and let me go hand this off to Johnny.
Okay.
Okay.
She was talking about they had them in the dollar bins as you enter Target. I'll bet most of our listeners have a Target somewhere by. And they were a dollar. I got a collection. Holiday time, they seem to promote those for stocking stuffers. But, boy, again, they can't really activate them, but they really, really love them. Some of them walk and some of them flip. And
yeah, you can do all kinds of stuff with those. And kids that I can't keep them sitting with me, if they're away, I will put it up on a table and let it flip. And they almost always come back because they hear it, too. And I make a big deal about, ooh, look, 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 what is it? What's it going to do? And I can almost always kind of hook a kid's attention back with that. Okay, the next game is Ella Fun. I love this game. Kate, I think you have this game too, don't you?
Oh, I've been through multiple Ella Funs. Yeah, that's a must-buy-it-the-day-it-goes-out thing, although I do go through phases of using it. But yeah,
I haven't used it in a long time, but I love this game. And, again, if mine is broken, I always find myself buying a new one whenever I see it on sale. You want to talk about that game and what that is and what that looks like?
Sure. It is a blue plastic elephant with a long, almost like a trash bag kind of a nose that snaps on, and it comes with kind of parachute cloth butterflies, and you put them in there, and it has four nets, and you turn it on, and the nose stands tall, and the butterflies fly out, although I frequently call them bugs because that's easier for most of my little friends to say, but sometimes if they're moving along, we call them butterflies. But anyway, so you catch the butterflies. And Laura talks about in her article about the fact that it's nice because they don't really have to take turns. Everybody gets to participate.
Right.
And I guess
it's a load of fun.
Yeah, it's a good.
And even if you don't have a kid that can actually use the net to catch the butterfly, I hardly ever even catch them. We're just talking about them. We're putting them back in. We're turning it on. We're watching them fly. Everything.
Right. I have a lot of kids who, it's funny how they don't necessarily have the instinct to even move the net. You know, they kind of stand there, but they don't really.
Like, I'm not magically a float and go right into my net. Yeah,
go right in. But a lot of
eye hand coordination.
Yeah, kind of collect them off the floor. I've even played with it without the nose on there and put them in there and let them fly out. And, you know, of course, like Laura always does and has taught me well about the sound effects. You know, I'm going, woo, and they're flying out. And however it works is a reasonable way to use it. At least that's my theory. So, but that's the kids are usually very enthusiastic about that one.
I blow dry my hair with that. You know, the elephant blow my hair and then blow their hair and blow their tummies. Yeah, you can blow the curtains. You can use it for all kinds of ways. But that's a great
game. I'm sure it's not the way that's intended, but it seems pretty safe. Like you couldn't put your fingers in there. Even a little finger couldn't fit in the fan mechanism. It's really pretty safe. So.
No, and again, the purpose of all this is to get interaction with an adult. So you would never let your child play with this game. This is not a game that you would leave down for him to be able to do, because I hardly know a two-year-old who would be able to get that. Get the butterflies in, put the nose on, turn it on, and actually do it. Again, this is an adult health kind of game.
Right, and they'd probably rip the nose off pretty easily if you really let them have at it. But, yeah, it's a great. They usually, most kids are very enthusiastic and love it at least for a while. So.
Yeah, it's a good 10 or 15-minute break, too, if you need that. The next thing, and Kate, you know what? We've nearly used the whole hour just talking about these movement things, so we'll definitely be ending this. What we might do is just do the whole series and know that we're going to take several weeks to kind of talk about a whole category of toys, which might have been a more realistic way for us to schedule this. But
well, we can always adjust it if we need the time. Like we said, this is our subject, so it's hard not to give our little tidbits.
Yeah, and I think this is so useful for parents because so many times adults just might not instinctively know how to play with a child who is not a good player on his own. So, again, this is information that you can use to get some new ideas for how to get your kid to interact with you. I like to use musical instruments, and I put this in the movement category because I would never really sit down do music group. We did. We might do it for 2 minutes, and then we're always going to get up and march because you can't have music without a parade. So that's another way that I might use a movement activity. And I like my most favorite musical instruments are the ones that the drum is kind of the holder for the cymbals and the maracas and the or shakers, if you want to call them that, any other little musical instrument I might put in there. Again, if the child has his own harmonica or his own blower, I'm not really big on having a child do things with his mouth and then him not owning that. So I don't really carry around horns and whistles, but I try to, because I know I would obsessively wash those, so that's just way too germy for me. But I might, you know, give a child a harmonica or a little horn and then let him keep that forever after that. But I think those musical toys are a good way to do that. A lot of speech pathologists really love the all those little blowing kinds of instruments. And I think that's fun, too, and has its place. But the marching is the big part for me, is that they would get up and move. And again, for kids who really need that deep pressure, boy, pounding those little feet as you march across the room is a good way to get a kid really, really regulated.
Yeah, I'm going to interject here, Laura. I know you do this because I learned it from you oh so long ago when I was just a wee developmental interventionist.
Oh, grasshopper.
Oh, yes, with the grasshopper. You taught me, and I don't know that most therapists know to do this, but Laura does. So now I do. But anyway, even if it's not necessarily a movement toy, let's say I know one of your tricks that I use periodically if you're doing a puzzle, and yet you have one of those kids who just really has trouble sitting and attending and focusing for more than 1 second, you might take that puzzle and zip it across the room so he has to get up and go get it. And he's,
yeah,
you know, you're kind of working that movement into what is normally a more focused sedentary activity, but if you can get the movement in there, it's more fun for him. So yeah. The other way that I do movement, not necessarily, not maybe a great time to mention it, but is to do movement in any kind of play that I do. I mean, we talked,
yeah,
we were dissing on books, but hey, books make great ramps for cars. And if you close the book page, especially the board books, if you close them, it makes a big wind. So if I'm getting,
yeah,
the big blow off on a kid on the rare occasion I even try a book, my book quickly becomes a fan that, you know, closes in their face and blows their hair back. And if you've got them, then that book's working. And maybe not the way that the manufacturer intended, but it's working. So
I use books for tunnels for choo-choos all the time. I'll stick,
mm-hmm,
a book over the train track, too, and it's instantly a tunnel.
And
so
kids
love
that novel use of things, you know, whether,
yeah,
they fully understand it or could initiate it on their own. When you tell them it's a tunnel and you set it up and the train goes through, they usually get it. You know,
yeah,
ooh, cool idea. Who knew that a book could be a tunnel? And
yeah,
so much fun. All of a
and
sudden it
then
becomes
that symbolic play.
That's right. There you go.
They're using one thing to represent another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back to the puzzle and the puzzle game. On the website, with the new DVD, there's a clip that you can watch that whole idea of using, and I call those puzzle races when I play with kids, and I really use it with my little friends that are discharged from our early intervention program, but that I still stay on as their private therapist. And especially for kids who have processing difficulty or difficulty following directions, and they may understand a lot of words, but they don't necessarily always follow directions in their day-to-day activities. So what I might do is, and you introduced this beautifully, you put the puzzle or the part that gets the pieces on the other side of the room, and then you stand back way across from it, and you have your pieces there, and you might put them on the floor and say, and again, you know, for a kid who's not talking, of course, you might, you know, just have them name which one it is. But most often, I use it as a receptive language activity or helping them process and follow directions. And so I might say, you know, initially, you know, where's the train? And then they get the train and run across and put it in and then run back to me. And then when they've when they're past this point, and this is how I most often use it with my three-year-old, is I might say, give me the one that flies. And so they have to look down and find a hot air balloon or a plane or a bird or whatever we're doing, and then run across and then come back. And then, or if we're working on following multiple step directions, but they can't do that, I might ask them for two separate things. I might say, give me the boat and the train. And they have to get those and then run, put them in, and then come back. And then, of course, we do a variation of that when we're cleaning up, too. I have them right in front of me after we've gotten all the pieces, and I say, okay, go get me the duck and the cat, or go get me the one that says, moo. So, again, they have to process that information, run, do it, keep it in their little memories while they're running across the room. They get the movement activity, run across, put it in, take it out, whatever we're doing, and then run back. And so it's a good 5 or even 10-minute activity if you kind of do it in that way. And there's a clip of that whole little segment from the DVD with my sweet little friend Emma Rose on the website that you can take a look and then think about how to set up some of those games. And then on the DVD, I've also got some things that I do with siblings like that. And then there's that's a great way, too, to involve older kids that kind of want to be a part of your therapy, but you can't really keep them interested. And then they become, they kind of take over the activity. So it's a way to kind of keep them involved and bump up the activity level a little bit for them. Like, say, for those kids, I would just ask them harder questions. You know, go find me one that lives in the zoo and says, I have to really think about that. And, again, that kind of keeps them cognitively challenged enough so that they're not causing trouble and keeping my little friend from paying attention. So, again, those are great activities. And I'm glad you introduced that in that section. I need to go back and put that in that section on the original article because that is a way that we use movement. And then
but you wouldn't think. I mean, and the other thing I like is not only are you working the movement into it, but you're making it so much more social because
yeah.
I have too many kids who once they finally master puzzles and they learn to like puzzles, which I think is wonderful, that's kind of the end of it. And it's even if mom's sitting there, it's really not social much at all. It's just kind of, you know, even if they're working language into it, they're not really encouraging the child to engage them or look at them or, you know, it's just get the ball, where's the duck? And they're doing those, but the kid is totally hunkered down and focused on the puzzle and really not with the child or me if I'm doing it. So I like to do whatever I can to keep them to really with me socially, really looking at me, really responding. And those are great ways when you start doing stuff like that, they're like, hey, now this is a fun puzzle.
Right. And then they're, and they're still remaining challenged. And it's still social. And it's movement. So you've hit those three things right there. OTs love that kind of thing, too. And you know what our OT friends do is they might put a tunnel down in the middle of the room and have the kid, you know, you're still doing the languagey part, but then they've got to crawl through the tunnel. Or our PT friends might put pillows down and the kid has to step over or hop over or jump over or whatever they're kind of working on. You know, they're adding that physical piece, too. So that's just an all-time favorite activity of mine because you can get almost anything you want to with that. A way that I use this today with my little friend Jack, who is over three, he's about 3.5, and we're starting to kind of work on categories. And so I would tell him, go get me an animal. And so I had, you know, two puzzles out, and, you know, we named it and did all the processing, you know, which one says moo, which one flies, which one goes on tracks. And then when to put it up, I would say, go over and get me one that's an animal. And so we had animals and things that go. So it was a good way to kind of, you know, even work a higher level language activity into that, you know, to do some categories. And I've even used that whole run across the room trick, even with, if we're not doing it with puzzles, but like set out my little Fisher-Price farm animals,
mm-hmm.
you know, and done it that way. And again, it's an activity. It's a way to keep a kid who needs to move. And sometimes for that last 15 minutes of therapy, you think, okay, I've already blown through everything in this bag. What are we going to do? It's a good way to kind of use an existing toy or a toy that they're a little bit interested in that you do want to hook them on and keep it. Like you said, you know, oh, boy, that puzzle's a lot more fun when I'm doing it that way.
Right. And for those of you who are listening, and I'm sure you're out there thinking, well, my child doesn't go get it. View her latest and greatest video on our DVD on our website and then consider purchasing it, because you are great at showing what do you do. I mean, if
well,
we're
the
all...
main thing you do is you go with them. You know, yeah. You grab their little hands and you say, run, run, go get it, come on, come on, come on, come on. Who can resist that? I mean, I hardly ever have a kid who sits down and says no with that. And even if they did, I would probably just pick them up and, you know, help them jump across the room. You know, and or do something really fun, again, that's going to kind of hook them and kind of make them want to continue to play with me in that way. But, it, again, it's a great activity to do when you've exhausted your other sit-down activities and you need a movement activity, but you haven't quite gotten everything you want accomplished. There are lots of different ways that you can use those games. And guess what? We're at the end of the hour, and we just got 3 movement toys today.
Can you believe it? Okay, I want to ask you one thing, Laura.
Okay.
I don't know if you do this or not, and I haven't done it for too terribly long, but it doesn't matter if the people are listening or it's recorded. I just want to ask you, do you ever, when you're doing a puzzle, and this is before you're working on that, you know, following, processing what you're saying and following commands and all that, but you're just really kind of working on, can he match it? Can he choose between two if you're naming one? This is kind of a recent thing I've found that I can't even believe that kids like it, and it seems to help them stay with the activity when I'm doing puzzles. I'll take 2 pieces and I mix them in my hands. And
oh,
I,
that's cute.
Oh, I make that's a big cute. Deal. I make a big deal out of it. Mix, 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 mix. And then I, like, pull them apart and I say, now, where's the duck? Get the duck. And
oh, that's
just,
cute, Kay. That's
I don't know why it works.
My back. I do it behind my back, or I'll put it in a kid's shirt. But I like the mix, mix, mix. And for a kid who's really visual.
Yeah. And I have so many kids who will really start, I mean, they light up. You know, I can see, ooh, I'm losing them. Yeah. And I start mixing, and they start twinkling and laughing. And before I know it, I can get them through half the puzzle or all the puzzle or whatever simply with the mix. I don't know which kid taught me that, but somewhere not too long ago, for some reason, I figured that out, and it's like I use it on a lot of those kids who really, you know, just don't have the ability to stay with it that long enough or the inherent interest to stay with it long enough or whatever. And if you just take 2 and mix it and then make a big deal out of that choice, they'll do it and do it and do it. So anyway, I just wondered if that – I didn't know if I picked that up from you or that was something
that's a
that –
Kate Hensler original.
I guess, or I snagged it somewhere else, but mix, 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 mix. They really like it. It's just so funny that is funny to kids.
That is funny. Sometimes I will stick it under the puzzle and make a big deal about where did it go.
Yeah.
Kids like
good.
That.
I don't do that. See, this is why we talk about toys, because we get each other's great ideas and then we use it for our own. There's never too many.
Sticking it in their clothes, that's always a winner. Anytime a kid is kind of a lower functioning kid, usually could do this for 30 minutes in a session, hide something in his clothes, and, you know, our little friend loves that right now.
Right. And I do that, but I just wondered if the mix was...
The mix?
Yeah, the in their
I'm
clothes.
I'm doing that tomorrow.
That's a good one.
That's cute. That's a great idea. Okay,
there, I gave you one. You've given me 500. We're about even,
you've
right?
You've given me more than that.
I gave you Shake, Shake, Shake on Elmo, or on Cookie Monster.
Gave me what?
Shake, shake, shake on cookies.
Yeah, that's a good one. I do it all the time now. Okay, try to talk about next week. Maybe not all of these. You know, toys might last the whole month of January.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of, there are lots of things that we can talk about in this topic. And again, share our secrets and maybe help parents out there who are having a hard time getting their kids to play. So that's all for this week, but next week we'll be back on Thursday night talking about toys. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye.